हरे ओम सहनावावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 22. What does it mean to chant incessantly? Raghunath Das Babaji. To chant incessantly means to be engaged in chanting Hari Nam at all times, even while eating, walking, bathing, and performing all the regular physical duties. The only exception is sleep. There are no restrictions for chanting according to time, place, or circumstance. One may be in a pure or impure condition. Yes?
Chanting while listening to the Bhagavatam or any Katha?
Generally, you get an idea when you're listening to Bhagavatam, then you wouldn't chant because you're already. The point is you're always chanting. So when the Bhagavatam is going on, then that's already chanted. You know, just like you wouldn't chant Japa during the kirtan.
Devotees
can do whatever they like, but the point is that he mentions here, while eating, walking, bathing, performing all regular physical duties, right? So if you're already in kirtan or if you're in that, then that's already the activity, you know. Otherwise, then, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Why it mentions pure and impure conditions?
Because even you're taking a bath, you're not in a pure condition. You can still chant. Because Gayatris, you can't chant in an impure state or Vedic mantras. So that's what's special about the holy name, is that even if one is in an impure state, you can still chant. Because these other mantras, unless you're bathed, you've done achman, you're in a pure place, then you can't do it. Does that make sense? Yoga also, you have to be, you know, pure place, everything is all nice. Then you can do the system. But the holy name, no matter what the situation, you can chant. So, yes.
That's not the case. That means that the mantra will not be effective.
It just means it doesn't work so good because it works based on the mode of goodness. See, the Gayatri Mantra, Vedic mantras work based on the mode of goodness, but the holy name is transcendental to all that, so it has nothing to do with whether you're in goodness or not.
So when women are contaminated, then are
then well, there's nothing else you can do about it. If you have some method to, you know, like that, so you chant anything. But generally, one doesn't attend other programs that one could, you know, make contaminate. So you know, on one's own, one chants, one does everything, but like that. But you would, you know, want to probably change the bead bag after. You know what I'm saying? When you take bath, then change the bead bag along with clothes and everything. Does that make sense? Probably recommended changing your bead bag every day, washing it every day. He said if you do that, then he'll make you into a Brahmin. So. Generally, that's one thing devotees don't worry about. You just kind of put the bead bag on until it kind of rots away. At least that's the men. The ladies will change it if the color's too outrageous to match their outfit. You know, then of course you change. But if you just change it because, you know, it's Rinda Devi, she likes a clean clothes, so then you do that every day, then one will develop the brahminical qualities. Vijay, kindly tell us whether we should know about Shuddha Krishna Nam to attain pure chanting. Raghunath Das Babaji. Shuddha Krishna Nam may be attained only when Shraddha fully matures into single-minded devotion. Any chanting at a level lower than Ananya Bhakti is either Namabhas or Namaparad. Right. Okay, so then Shuddha, so he's saying, or whatever else we should know about Shuddha Nam. Okay, so when the Shraddha is fully matures into a single-minded devotion, that's when it comes up. So the point is, when we have faith that this process is what works, developing love for Krishna is the ultimate goal, then this Shuddha Nam can be chanted. Right? But if one thinks something else is there, then how will it be Shuddha Nam? Because you think there's Krishna and something else. Mm-hmm. So it's mixed. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yes.
So it corresponds with Krishna Nam to the state of Ruchi at least?
Not so much that, because it says it means Baba matures at Nishta. You know, like that, but then it becomes very dynamic at that. You know, in other words, there's below Nishta, and then Ruchi and Asakti, then Baba. So those are kind of like natural stages, like that. So, but then, you know, it's also as it goes, you know, that's mature, so fully mature would indicate something higher. But the point is as your faith is fixed to that degree, then the holy name is also in that pure state. Because if you're fixed in the devotional service, right, if you're fixed in pure Shuddha Bhakti, that means then you'll be chanting Shuddha Nam, right? So to that degree, you're fixed in Shuddha Bhakti, to that degree, you're Shuddha Nam. Right? Like that. We always remember the name himself is always pure. It's our consciousness. Does that make sense? It's like the deity. It's not that if we're more Krishna conscious, then Krishna's more there. And if we're not Krishna conscious, then Krishna's less there. He's always there. It's just how much we were able to appreciate. So it's the same with the name. The Shuddha Nam doesn't depend on us, right? That's the natural thing. Is I'm chanting pure, that's why it's a pure name. No, he's the pure name anyway. That's why there's offense, right? If it's not the pure name, what does it matter? You know, go up to the pillar, tell it it's a nonsense rascal. You know, does it do anything? You know, when you turn around and whacks it in the head. You know? You know, it doesn't do that. Does that make sense? It just doesn't do that. Right? It's because it is Krishna, that's why there's offense. But it's our appreciation then. Because, so in other words, as we surrender, he reciprocates. So it's Krishna. So as we have that faith, he reciprocates more. As the faith is less, he reciprocates less. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not dependent upon us. That's why we get the pure name from the line of devotees. Right? Then it's a matter of our chanting it purely. The name is pure. The point is our chanting, is it pure chanting? Not is it the name is pure. Does that make sense? So it's just how much he manifests to reciprocate. Yes?
Or is that one devotee asked a senior devotee about home, deities installed at home? Said if we install deities at home and worship them, will Krishna reciprocate? And he says, yeah, of course you will reciprocate, but it's if you follow the rules and regulations. But whether you will experience that reciprocation, that's another thing.
Yes.
What does that mean in regard to what you're saying?
Means one is doing so much for someone else, do they always appreciate it? Does that make sense? Okay, let's. You have an adolescent, and you have the parents. Parents are doing so many things for the adolescent. But what's the common sentence that the adolescent says?
It's my room.
It's my room. You're ruining my life. You know. Yeah, you know, all these things like that. You know, somehow or another, you know, that they have a room that has a door on it, you know, in a house that, you know, hasn't been towed off or something like that. They have food, they have clothes, you know, they're in a school, all these different things are there. None of that's noticed. Right? Does that make sense? You know, that's the whole point. So anything other than pure nam is namabhas or namaparad. Means it's namabhas because we're not appreciating. So that's how he reciprocates with us. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Vijay, Gurudev, should Harinam be considered the sadhya or the sadhana? Raghunath Das Babaji. When Harinam is chanted at the stage of sadhana bhakti, then he may be considered the sadhana. Yet when Harinam is chanted at the stage of bhava bhakti and prema bhakti, then Harinam is indeed realized as the sadhya vastu, the supreme goal of spiritual attainment. Shuddha Krishna Nam manifests in degrees proportionate to the intensity of Shuddha Bhakti of the chanter. Right? So that degree that you're manifesting Shuddha Bhakti, to that degree, then Shuddha Nam manifests. Yes?
Shuddha Nam purifies the chanter and gives a taste.
Yes.
We cannot attain it by our own effort.
What would you do other than chanting the holy name?
Yes, so in accordance to that, Shuddha Nam manifests only when we are on the whatever platform, Shuddha Bhakta, on the higher platform.
Right.
So it means it purifies our by its own power.
Yes.
And we attain it by the mercy of the name.
Yes.
What should we do? Do we desire? Be ready for that?
Means one has to desire it and make the endeavor for it, and then Krishna reciprocates. So as we surrender, he reciprocates.
And causes mercy?
That's even available. You have to understand, we're the rat bags here. You know, it's not that, you know, we're the great guys and that, hey, come on. You know. It is that we're the ones that have come here, but Krishna comes along with us and makes all the arrangements like that. See, when you're dealing on the mundane, not recognizing Krishna, then as you work, you put in, you know, one unit of effort, you get one unit of result. You put in 10, you get 10. But on the platform of recognizing him and trying to interact with him in devotion, you take one step, he takes 10. You know, so even in that case, the profit is much greater. So if you look at it, the profit margin, 1 to 1 or 1 to 10, you know, so it's much better. So that's the point, is you have to make the effort, but he'll reciprocate so much greater. That's the mercy. Does that make sense? So we still have to endeavor. Is that a problem?
Yeah, it doesn't get through. That's what it is.
What doesn't get through?
Why we don't endeavor enough.
Why don't we endeavor? We're not so smart. Manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya. It means that we're just not so smart. Because here, we're being offered just like that. You do karma. You do really good work, you get a really good result. You don't do good work, you don't get a good result. Here's something you do, make a little bit of effort, you get so much result. And not only that, the other one, you do it, you get the result, but then the result, the power of it runs out. You know, it's like if I give you some money, you go out shopping, it runs out. Devotional service never runs out. Can you imagine that? Unlimited credit card, never runs out, you know, like that. You know, one of those black ones, you know, can't even see the name. Yeah, yeah, you know, so, but it doesn't run out. So that's the thing, is that the devotional service, you're putting in the effort, it's eternal instead of temporary, and you're getting 10 times the benefit instead of a 1-to-1. But still we think, no, there must be something in that one-to-one there, you know? And not only that, I can do whatever I want, and I'll get whatever I want, right? I'll do whatever activity I want, even though it's not actually connected with the result, you know? Does that make sense? But I'll get the result I want, right? You know, I'll come up to the person, insult them. And then from that, they'll understand, wow, I'm such a nonsense person, and this other person is such a great person, and I've never understood it all this time. So now I'm going to really make an effort to go out of my way to really be, you know, nice and interact with that other person, right? That's the result we want from going up and insulting them, right? Connected? Not really. No. Like that. It means it goes that way. It doesn't go the other way, of course. No, they have to be nice, and I'll be nice. They insult the hey, you know, like that. But if I do it the other, yeah, it works, you know. You understand? So that's the problem, is that we're so attached to the idea that, no, there must be some way you can deal with the material energy to get that little bit something there. You know? But that's you know, what Dhruva Maharaj said, you know, it says, I was looking for broken pieces of glass. He doesn't even say a nice, you know, glass thing. Broken pieces of glass. Right? And then, but instead you're being offered the jewel, the diamond. Right? But somehow or another, you know, hey, both are clear. Hey, you can, you know. You know? Does that make sense? So that's why by the association of the devotees, then we develop that interest, that drive, that, you know, that effort. So that's what it's looking for. So it's all based on that. So the quicker one develops that, the quicker one advances, right? Avoiding offenses. But the less one understands that, then the slower one advances. It's that simple. It's just a matter of the faith is there that this is what works. Then. It moves fast. If we think that it's this and something else, then with whatever that degree of that something else is, that degree it'll slow it down. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you have two people, different levels of spiritual advancement, different levels of sukriti. Can one with less advancement, less sukriti, by use of intelligence, by their own willpower, just overtake the other person because they decide, today, this is it, I've had it, I understand, Maharaj said this, that's it, I'm finished. And then zoom, right, they're off it.
Yeah, as long as that they understand it's by Krishna's grace and they understand that process. They think it's just, you know, I'm going to grit my teeth and that's why I'll advance, then it won't. Means it's nice, it develops renunciation and that, so there's less attachment to the material. So then there's every chance that they will surrender to the name. But bhakti is still bhakti in that you have to be committed to that. That's why it's not enough to be committed to, I'm giving up material attachment. You have to be committed to, I want to develop love for Krishna. Because the other one, it'll free one from the material entanglement, but developing love for Krishna means that's something you have to want, because it's a relationship. So you have to want the relationship, right? Liberation is the situation. But the relationship is more than the situation. That has that dynamic interaction. So much we're so used to, I adjust my situation, then I'll be happy. No, but adjusting the situation is potential for happiness if you endeavor. But that element of endeavoring is never discussed. Because, you know, the manufacturer who made the billboard can't ensure you're going to do anything other than buy their product. So their point is if you have the situation of actually ownership of their product, then automatically that result that you want is there. But what they can't figure out is that there's an endeavor in between, right? You know, it's just like, let's say we take, you know, the famous, you know, spray on deodorant, right? You know, the guy sprays it on, he walks down the street, and all these, you know, high class, educated, professional women dressed, you know, to kill, walk out and follow him down the street, right? You know, as if even on the street there's that many girls that wear clothes like that or look like that, right? You know, like that. But this is exclusively, that's all that's walking out, right? You know, like that. Now, if it actually is that deodorant, right? Now we could go down to the zoo get ourselves a nice orangutan or something, you know, or a silverback gorilla or something, you know, a little more macho, right? Okay, spray on the deodorant and he'll go down the street. Now, accordingly to the ad, all the ladies should still be coming out. Right? You know what I'm saying? But ultimately, it doesn't matter, you know, that you don't smell bad, you have to look good. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, these things they leave out of it, the elements of what you have to do or this and that, you know. He's not walking down the street and, like, picking his nose or something, you know, or, you know, scratching funny or, you know, doing weird stuff, you know. So they forget all these elements, you know. I mean, it's not that they forget. They make it very sure that none of this happens. If the guy does it, you know, cut, you know, take two, you know, goes on like that until the guy gets it right, right? So in other words, you have to behave in a way that if women will appreciate, then they'll reciprocate. But the endeavor aspect is always left out, right? You know, it's like you have the car, then you'll be happy, right? But then what they don't point out is you'll only be happy if you drive properly, because if you don't drive properly, you know, you have this fancy car, you know, can do 300 kilometers an hour, right? But the sign says 60, you know, like that. So if you do 300, you'll get a ticket. You won't be happy, you know. You know, if you're in Holland, you go above 160, they take your car away. That's it. It's not like they impound it and you have to come down. It's just gone, like that. You know, so you never see anyone in Holland doing more than 160. It's just like exact. You know, because if you do 161, they take your car away, because their limit is 120, but they'll tolerate up to 160. You know, so it's they don't talk about that stuff. You know, so that's the whole point, is that the idea of abhideya is not there. You know, lottery, I don't do anything, right? You know, like that. I mean, I made the endeavor, I bought the ticket. But you don't have to work for that money. Anybody else has to work hard to get that much money, right? So that's the whole thing, is this idea, I'll get something for nothing, right? You know, it's the idea of the sale, you know, it's as I'm getting something, you know, or get this much extra free, you know, you buy this much and get this one, like this. It's always the idea of that, getting something without endeavor. So that's the problem, is we apply that in the spiritual life, is, you know, what can I get without any endeavor? But the point is Krishna's only asking you to make a little endeavor and he'll reciprocate with so much more. Like, you see, the lady, she just offered Krishna how much fruit he could hold, right? And then in reciprocation, she has a basket of jewels, right? So you can't really compare that, you know? So that's how Krishna reciprocates. But it's just that we have to make the endeavor.
So let's say somebody hears this,
right,
and their response is, yeah, I know, but I don't have any desire to serve Krishna. So what's going on?
It's just, you know, they're, you know, nicely materially absorbed. They somehow or another still have faith that the material energy will give something, right? Like that, by whatever mode it is, conditioned by goodness, passion, ignorance, they think that something is still there. And so it's nice, I understand that, but there's no realization, because they think that material energy still has something to offer. Like that. That's why much of the time when one's lost everything, one becomes more Krishna conscious, right? And that's why one takes it up, throws oneself in, gets really good. Then, you know, facilities come from, you know, just the piety of devotional service. And then when it's taken away again, why did Krishna do that? You know, it's like it worked the first time really nicely, you became more Krishna conscious, but now this time it's, hey, you know. You know, so it's
an honest devotee will, when he finds that he or she doesn't have desire, he'll just say, I want to enjoy. And a dishonest devotee will
make up a philosophy.
Yeah.
Like that. That's the popular thing. Before it was, no, they would just leave. But nowadays, no, you don't want to leave because, you know, you're too old to leave. So you make up a philosophy. What are you going to do anyway? You know? No, but the point is, there's no taste, then there's supposed to be. So it's just associate with devotees that do have. take part in the program, focus more on that. So it just means there's a taste for something else. Or it can also mean if there was more of a taste and there's less now, as he mentioned before, then there's offenses. Like that. So then one should think, you know, how am I being offensive? What's going on? How am I offending the devotees, the deities, the holy name, something? You know? So then one looks at that, tries to remove that. Yeah.
Is there a risk that we just start telling ourselves these things instead of actually endeavoring, oh, I'm such a rascal?
No, but the point is you're such a rascal, okay, that's a situation. Now what are you going to do about it?
Yeah. See, sometimes it doesn't.
Like, you know, it's like you've fallen in the mud. So what do you do? Oh, I'm so muddy. I've got mud. Oh, I even got mud over here. Oh, no, this is the end of... No, you go take a bath. Point is, okay, there's mud, take a bath. So if there's impurity, then do something. Because it's not an identity that I am impure. That's also ignorance. That's why lamentation, sorrow aren't recommended, because then we're identifying with the ignorance. Oh, I'm so useless, I'm so... No, we're not so any... The soul is pure. It's supposed to be serving Krishna. We can say maybe the conditioned nature is so useless, but the point is it's only in that condition because we behaved in a way that made us useless. Right? In other words, we were useful, but misused that, so then we become useless. So it's just a matter of you behave properly, then it becomes useful again. It's not material energy being temporary. Nothing's permanent anyway. So even if it's bad, it won't remain like that. Right? That's the I Ching. Basically, you can say the essence of it is this: if it's good, don't be too overly elated because it will go bad. And if it's bad, don't be too upset because with time it'll go good. That's the basic underlying principle. Right? In other words, just, you know, be equipoised. You know, if it's good, nice. If it's bad, don't worry.
Like the devotee who said, I'm the most fallen, and Prabhupada said, you're not the most anything.
Yes, yeah. You know, Hiranyakashipu. Now that's fallen. You know, we're small timers. You know, yeah. It's like that.
Yeah. So then you become a pure devotee, and then you think, I'm useless.
Yes.
So can you explain the difference?
Because useless means I'm not always thinking of Krishna, I'm not always absorbed, so how am I going to be useful in serving Krishna because I'm thinking of something else? Even though they're most of the time, there was one conversation between these two older advanced devotees, heard once, you know, really, really older ones. And one was saying, you know, one was commenting, you know, they find that about 11 minutes out of the hour, you know, on a consistency, they're always fully absorbed in Krishna. And the other one's saying, yeah, and I'm about it, 11 minutes out of the hour, I'm not. You know, they were just discussing kind of where they, I guess they had known each other for a long time or something. You know, these were like these old 90-year-old guys, you know. So the point is it's just a matter of how absorbed one is. So it's just a matter of time, because if one's not fully absorbed, then you're going to miss something. You know, as we'll get into later, it's just a glance, and that's all the instruction of what you're supposed to do. So if you're not conscious of that moment, you don't get the instruction. So then someone else does it. You know, so therefore the element that if it's not fully, then you're once useless. You know, one didn't do it right. I mean, so we come across this. Radharani has left her in the previous, you know, pastime. Then, because basically every 20 minutes, the kind of scenario or the pastime changes. You know, they taste one thing for like 20, and then it changes in the next. So that means all that's being managed and all that's being organized. So in one of them, then she's left her choli back wherever they were, but how they dress, you can't really tell. At least the boys won't tell, but the girls might be able to tell, because the boys won't look closely, but the girls can tell these things. So then Radharani's worried Lalita Devi will notice. So she gives a glance to one of the maidservants, you know, to Rupa. Rupa goes and finds it, and then comes back, and because they're dancing at the time, she comes out also and joins the dance, and in the dance she puts the choli on Radharani. Now that's expert, right? And Lalita therefore doesn't know that, you know, anything about the previous pastime. That's conscious. Right? So that's why we're trying to be 100% Krishna conscious. Because then you can do stuff like that. Otherwise, then you're not going to be able to do stuff like that. You know what I'm saying?
Do you stop thinking you're a nonsense at prema? Or beyond?
No, you stop thinking you're a nonsense when you give up the mode of ignorance. Hmm. Right? Means on that way of the material, that I'm a nonsense, meaning I'm identifying with it. What he's talking about, then that's always there. Like that. The one always feels that one, you know, is not competent enough. But I mean, not competent enough, but, you know, it could have done better.
So the gopis don't high-five each other.
Generally not. Like that. It means, no, they appreciate someone does something that... You know, they get the rasa dance and they're all dancing together, but at the end then they dance individually, you know, like that for everybody else. And so they do nice, and then sadhu, you know, like this, and it's, you know, well done and everything like that. So they highly appreciate any service anyone's done, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's there. Nice things to do. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Right, but on most levels, the gopis, they don't really think much about themselves. Like, I'm competent, not competent.
No, because think about that means then you have to analyze that. They're analyzing what's the situation, what you can do for Krishna. Right? So only if it's a situation of training, then they, you know, are in the position there, and the teacher's in their position, and then they learn something. But otherwise, you're just doing. You know, there's no time to get mental. You're doing something. So that's why everything's very busy. Right? So that's basically why ladies have to keep themselves always busy. Because if they stop being busy, then their mind basically, you know, eats them for breakfast. Yeah. So that's why the element of multitasking, because if there's not many things going at once, when one ends, there has to be other things going on. The man does one thing, finishes that, thinks, wow, I'm cool. You know, like that, right? You know, like that. But the way ladies is if, as one's finishing, if there's not one already in play, then that's trouble. It's just the nature. Because the women are who create the variety. The men don't create the variety. They create situations in which you can create variety. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's how it works. Right, so it works really nice over there. Over here, it's the same mechanics. It just drives you nuts. But over there, it doesn't. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea. Vijay, are there any distinctions between Krishna Nam and Krishna Swarup? Raghavan Das Babaji. The answer is negative. There are no differences whatsoever. However, there is one unique, even mystical feature in this subject. Hari Nam is more merciful than Krishna Swarup. Offenses committed against Krishna Swarup are never forgiven by Krishna. However, offenses against both Krishna Swarup and Krishna Nam are both very kindly absolved by the mercy of Hari Nam. Therefore, one should understand and commit to memory the 10 offenses to Hari Nam. Then one must meticulously avoid perpetrating these offenses, because one must rise above Nam Aparad in order to chant Shuddha Nam. Remind me tomorrow to discuss Nam Aparad, the offenses to Hari Nam. So Krishna and his name are non-different, but there's one mystical difference is that Krishna himself personally become offended, and you're not going to remove that one. But by taking shelter of the holy name, you remove any offenses to the name and to Krishna's form. Right? Like that. So therefore...
What do we mean by offending Krishna's Swarup? Just coming into material existence is an offense?
No. Means, you know, actually dealing with him badly.
So that either means we were in Leela, like...
No, not like that. Means the deity is there, you know.
And other than the deity, then it's...
Means you have pastimes, you have so many things. You know, you think, why Krishna's doing this, or...
I could just read a pastime and think, this is nonsense.
Yeah, that's... because the pastime and Krishna are not different. Okay. Because there you're thinking of the form and the activity, like that. But Krishna's name then will remove the offense of all that. So that's why he's the most merciful. That's why it's special. But the point is it's still Krishna.
Yeah.
So it means seva prada masuri is then malapra?
No, it just means they just don't. It's means seva prada, you have the ones where it's just not dealing properly, but the offense to him personally.
So Krishna's group and seva, like beating, it's not the same.
It's the same, but at the same time, you have to decide, because within there's so many other things. You know? There's so many. See, there's one thing is, let's say, you haven't taken a bath properly, that, so you don't smell so good. So when you go into the deity room, so that's offensive. But it's not like you specifically offended the deity personally. It's just not nice. You know what I'm saying?
So the gradation.
Yeah. Vijay Kumar and Vrajanath fell at the feet of their beloved spiritual master and requested permission to leave. They smeared the sacred dust of his feet upon their heads and departed. Walking home slowly, they were deep in thought about the glories and purely spiritual identity of Sri Harinam. Summary of chapter 24. Nitya Dharma, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Part 12, Elucidation of Namaparad. That night, Vijaya and Vrajanath chanted Harinam with pure Shraddha 50,000 times upon their Tulsi beads. The following morning, they felt greatly exhilarated, feeling that by the mercy of Sri Krishna, they had been able to chant purely. Then, in a blissful discussion, they exchanged personal observations about their experience in chanting. The day was quickly devoured by a mixture of such devotional activities, beginning with a dip in the Ganga, deity worship, chanting Hari Nam, studying the philosophy of the Dasamula Siksha, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, serving the Vaishnavas, honoring Krishna Prasad, and so on. When evening approached, they left for Sri Vasangan in Mayapur. Entering the bhajan kutir of Sri Raghunath Das Babaji, they offered their prostrated obeisances. Raghunath Das Babaji spoke softly with his usual air of composed joy. He said, just as chanting is the highest devotional principle, similarly its antipode is namaparad, more serious than all other sinful activities and offenses. The Padma Puranya. So here's my point. More serious than all other sinful activities and offenses. So it's worse than sevaparads. It's worse because the point is the name is the one that can save you from all other things. So if you offend him, then what's the position? Right? Yes.
So sometimes we're chanting,
mm-hmm.
and we're completely inattentive, which is the basis of opera. Mm. So should one think, I should just stop because this is worse than committing sin. I'm committing opera to the world.
No, but there's no other alternative. It's just like when you take sugar candy, if you have jaundice, it doesn't taste sweet. It tastes bitter. But the only way to get rid of it and appreciate the sweetness is to keep taking it.
Even if one feels helplessly drawn to commit opera, I can't control my mind.
No, there's nothing else you can do. The one you really have to watch out for, because that will just get in the way of, you know, developing nicely the holy name. But it just means you won't be advancing very well. But the one that destroys it is offending the Vaishnavas. That's worse. That means the basis may be inattention, but actually, but all those others, they aren't as great as offending Vaishnavas. So that's why Vaishnavas, from the previous point where we're discussing, the Vaishnavas perform some sinful activity, but the devotee who offends him because he thinks it's immoral is actually done a worse sin than the one who's committed the sinful activity.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. That's the fun part about it. You know. So in other words, morality doesn't stand supreme, right? Means in other words, Shuddhanam, that stands supreme. Dealing with the Lord and his devotees in an appropriate way according to Vaishnava etiquette, that's supreme. like that. Right? Basically, the other one is how economical we don't bother each other. Morality means how I don't economically bother you. That's what morality is for. But unfortunately, somehow or another, it's taken as spiritual, you know, or equivalent to, or even religious. It's not. It's just what gets in the way of the community experience of economics. Like that. Does that make sense? That's all it's doing. And so someone who does that, then there has to be retribution. There must be justice. There must be punishment, purification, because I'm not going to allow that my economic opportunities or someone else's might be hindered. Right? So that's actually all it's about. But pranamoy is all about economics. That's how it's defined. And so within pranamoy is morality, justice, and economics. Yes.
Can you please connect how morality, let's say, for example, infidelity to one's partner is connected to economics? Why it's such a...
Because then the other person is not getting the gain that they would want out of the relationship. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In this thing, because we're saying, oh, that's bad. Are we looking at it from the platform of, according to the nature, then that possessiveness of the woman means this is hers, so therefore it's not good if something of hers is being used by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Is that the discussion of why it's immoral? No, because nobody even knows what the nature is of men and women, so they don't even bother with that kind of stuff. Dharma is not even the question. It's not that the Vedas say it's not good. It's that I think it's not good. Because if the Vedas say don't do something else and I think it's not good, I say, oh, that's archaic. Mm-hmm. But if I agree with it, then, oh, see here?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, okay, you know, the sannyasi, why, he shouldn't have any facility, okay? You know, grihastha has a facility like that because it says here. But if it says also the grihastha should, you know, listen to and surrender to the sannyasi, oh, now that we can't do. You know what I'm saying? So everybody picks and chooses. So it's not dharma. It's just, it's artha. Because bourgeois culture is artha. It's not dharma. You know, kshatriya culture, that was more nobility and dharma. You're supposed to do this. They didn't want to do that, but they did it. You go to these dinners and programs and ceremonies. It's like it takes half an hour to raise a flag, right? You just walk out there and go like this, and it's up in 30 seconds. But it takes half an hour. The guy's coming out, marching back and forth, and blowing on trumpets or shooting guns or doing that. Everyone in perfect line. Everyone had to polish their boots for 3 hours beforehand and do this and that and practice for days. It's a whole rigmarole to raise a flag. But they do that because if they don't do that, then there is no discipline. If there's no discipline, then there's no protection. There's no safety.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's dharma. But sitting there and discussing someone's rights and this and that without discussing obligations, that's artha.
Mm. Right.
In the sense. Because dharma means, what are my obligations? I don't have to worry about my rights. If I do my obligations and everybody else is doing their obligations, my rights are automatic.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes.
So the difference between immoral activity and criminal activity, that's shastra.
Well, immoral is criminal. Yeah, you could say it like that. But shastra defines what things are worse than what.
Okay, but immoral activity is arbitrary, I mean...
No, it means the Shastra defines both of them.
Okay.
You know, that's the thing, is it defines what is immoral, because means you're, in other words, immoral, you're dealing with the situation improperly, you're not making profit off of it.
Yeah.
You know, you're not gaining like that. But the thing is you can be moral, but irreligious. Because the point is morality has to be in line with religion, right? And religion should be in line with liberation. And liberation should be in line with devotion, right? You know, just like sense gratification should be in line with artha, right? It means if you don't put the food in your mouth, how are you going to taste it? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, like, you know, for babies, it's not so much taste, it's more fun. you know, like that. You know. Is that so? Is that right? Okay. Raghunath Das Babaji spoke softly with his usual air of composed joy. He said, just as chanting is the highest devotional principle, similarly his antipode is Namaparad, more serious than all other sinful activities and offenses. The Padma Purana, Svarga Kanda 48-49, states when describing Harinam, only incessant chanting of Harinam can effect the purification of one who is infected with Namaparad. Indeed, the incessant chanting of Harinam is the only way to achieve the prayojana of human life, Krishna Prema. So then that's here, the pramana for that. Take heed that counteracting Namaparad is troublesome. Therefore, intelligent persons will carefully avoid committing Namaparad at all. That means the only way to counter Namaparad is through chanting. Right, so incessant chanting. So, but it's harder to get rid of Namaparad than it is to avoid Namaparad in the first place.
So now I'm trying to counteract Namaparad. As far as I understand, the effects of Namaparad don't leave one until the stage of Bhava, or maybe Prema.
No, it's in Bhava up to. I've mentioned who I was said before is there's that complete attachment to Krishna. I don't even remember the term used. No. Purvarag. Means at that point when it's samadhi, then it's burnt up, like we see the gopis that didn't go. Then in that separation from Krishna, that total meditation on Krishna was so intense. You know, they've come to the platform of samadhi. That all the previous pious and impious results are completely burned. So that's when it completely goes away. So but it'll go away enough to be workable.
So when we're talking about counteracting, it seems like there's two levels. One is trying to chant without offense, and the other is just advancing, because it's not going to be counteracted completely until you reach.
No, but the counteracting means it's just that you're not thinking of Krishna. So, in other words, that complete, full absorption of Krishna is not going to happen until samadhi. Right? In Smarana Dasa, the fifth level is samadhi, when one is fully absorbed. So the perfection of Smarana Dasa, that you're so absorbed in Krishna, that's all you're interested in, to that intensity. At that point, then it goes away. Because then you're qualified to personally associate with Krishna. Up to that time, you're associating with the Nitya Siddhas, like that. It means, well, it's actually to say, if you have that interest, then you take up that association with Nitya Siddhas. But if you're just happy being in the spiritual world, then you may not. Like that. That's why we're told about that here. So when we get there, if we're seeking out advanced association here, we'll seek out advanced association there. It's the same practice, right? But if we don't look for it here, we won't look for it there. You know, it's not that I'll do whatever I want here and then there I'll be perfect. No, it's the same. The practices of sadhana bhakti are simply the activities of what they do in the spiritual world spontaneously. They're just documented, and you're supposed to do these. It means if you want to become on the level of spontaneous devotional service, you do the activities that those on spontaneous devotional service do. Therefore, here's what you should do. So if you're doing it because this is what you're supposed to do, that's vaidhi. If you're doing it because you like to do that, that's rag.
But if you're still doing that, then you couldn't get up there. It has to be corrected here, right?
Yeah, but still, there's still correction there. That's what bhava is. It's in between the two. But you always have a sandhi. You have conditioned, and you have prema. So bhava is what's in between. It's the liberated state where you're not in the material world, but you haven't developed prema. That's tatastha. So in other words, bhava is the natural, just state of existence of the jiva. But its natural inclination and perfection is developing prema. But if we misapply that element of prema that should develop, then we develop it within the material so that it turns into lust. So that prema turns into lust. So it's a matter of turning it back into the other side. Does that make sense?
Yes. So bhava still means physical body, prema?
No, bhava means spiritual body. Spiritual body, spiritual world. You know, it's spiritual cow dung that you're putting on the spiritual wall, but you're happy just putting cow dung on the wall and doing your family, your duties around the house and taking care of the kids in the house and cooking dinner and serving the members of the family. That's why you don't have prema. So if that's first time around, that's what gets you here. Second time around, now you know don't do that. So now you're looking for Krishna. So then you'll notice that, you know, everybody's, you know, cooking dinner and doing that and doing the household duties, but there's some that they're doing them, but they're not focused on them. They're focused on Krishna. So then you take up their association. And in their association, you learn to always be absorbed in Krishna. And so being absorbed in Krishna, that brings you to the point of Purvarag, that total attachment. And then when that comes, then you can take up that service, you know, directly serving of Krishna. It's very direct and practical. You know, only bringing that, because we generally think, well, this is lower, so that's high. It's the same thing. That's the mercy. We're being given the opportunity to do the activities they do in the spiritual world. But we think, oh, this is sadhana bhakti, I want to do the higher stuff. No, but that's all they're doing. But they just showed it. Goes into the kitchen, you know, gets a pot, cuts some vegetables, throws it in the pot, you know, pushes it around. That's what she does. So it's the same thing here. The mechanics are the same. The difference is in what is gained from the mechanics. Because you're dealing with, here you're dealing with an unconscious machine. There you're dealing with a conscious machine. Right? And everything you deal with is conscious. Right? It's all Krishna. So it's special. So it's not, its mysticalness is just the wonderfulness of how it goes on and the taste that's gained from it and how wonderfully it works. But as far as just mechanics, so that's why these mechanical elements generally are not what's discussed. It's the attitude and the goal that's discussed. Because the mechanics, the skills are the same. But you don't have, the skills aren't changed. It's the attitude is changed.
What category is attitude?
Attitude is sambandha. It's prajumna within sambandha. Right? It means the actual field is shankarshan, but the attitude is prajumna. It means you have a field, so what's the attitude for that field? And therefore, then from that field, what goals can it gain? And therefore, what are the engagements that should be done? That's the abhidhaya. So those four together, that is the complete understanding of how you say, sambandha. Then you actually apply that plan, that's abhidhaya. Okay? And then gaining and experiencing a result, that's prayojana. But you have to know what is abhidhaya and prayojana before you start. But that all is dependent upon the right attitude. Does that make sense? Vijaya. Srila Gurudev, what are the symptoms of Shuddhanam? Raghavan Das Babaji. Chanting without a trace of Nam Aparad is Shuddhanam. Perfect or imperfect pronunciation of Hari Nam is not the criterion for chanting purely. Study this injunction from the Padma Puran, Svarga Kanda 48.90. Last one is 48.49. Okay. If a devotee just once utters Hari Nam purely, or if just one Shuddhanam enters the path of the devotee's mind or ear, then that one Shuddhanam will certainly deliver the devotee from material bondage. Whether vibrated properly or improperly, with correct or incorrect grammar, vibrated in separate parts, or properly conjoined. O Brahmana, the potency of Shuddha Harinam is certainly great. However, if one uses the vibration of Harinam to achieve health, wealth, sons, and an opulent residence, or chance under greed for love, distinction, puja, and pratishta, adoration and position. In other words, if one utters Hari Nam with offense, such chanting will produce the eternal transcendental result very soon. Such chanting will not produce the eternal transcendental result very soon. Therefore, one should diligently avoid offenses in chanting Sri Hari Nam. The point is only by chanting can you get rid of it. So it's just a matter of it just slows the process down. But if one chants purely, then the process is very quick. I mean, as quick as means can be as quick as a moment, 1/11th of a second.
But he said, even if chanted improperly or purely. So I was always under the concept, you chant once, shoot a nam, okay, you're good to go. But you're chanting so many other noms, all right, if something is pulling you about a little bit of nam. But there he said, either
shuddha
or impure.
No. He didn't say shuddha or impure. He's saying properly or improperly, yeah, so not improperly. Impure. Improperly means your pronunciation isn't very great. In other words, so you don't have a... It means your tongue doesn't chant Sanskrit very well. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Most Sanskrit grammarians wouldn't agree that that's appropriate. But if chanted purely, it works. That's what it's meaning.
So when it's saying, what did it say? Free from material bondage? That means any nam that's not nam aparad, that one is... Freedom.
Yeah, it means if it's freed from nam aparad, then it's shuddha nam. So he says even if one pure name enters his mind or ear like that, then he's freed from material bondage.
But can you chant a pure name if you're not on the level of bhava?
But he says just one enters the path means it can be someone else's pure name. That's why you associate with those who chant nicely. The thing is also this thing about being freed from material bondage. That's the easy thing. It means basically Namabhas gives liberation. So that's why it's not a big deal. We make it, no, but it has to be, you know, like this, we make it difficult. That's the easy thing. The difficulty is prema. That's the thing. Like that. Such chanting will not produce the eternal transcendental result very soon. The eternal transcendental result is prema, not liberation. That comes from Namabhas. But Shuddha Nam, that gives prema. So any devotee, basically, taking up the process, is liberated. But they don't think they're liberated. So they, again, act as an unliberated person. So again, you start those responses are there, but they're liberated. You know, it's like the person is awake, but he's still acting as if he's asleep. You know, still seeing the tiger attack him, but there's no tiger, right? That's the problem. So these things, the element of liberation, that's not the big deal at all. It's the,
yes. Make me stop chanting. Without
offenses. What's
that?
Making this chanting.
Making this result love. You pronounce the name very carefully before the love is not there yet.
Yeah, so what's the problem?
What's the
means the result of chanting is love. Let us go back to the example given. Sugar candy is very sweet, right? It's the purest form of sugar. But someone who has jaundice, when they eat sugar candy, it tastes bitter because of the disease of jaundice. Now, the only cure for the jaundice is sugar candy. There is no other cure. So then even though it tastes bitter, if they can't to continue chanting, it will purify. So even if there's other things, one is not behaving properly, so many other things, by chanting, that's the only cure. right? So that's the whole thing, is we could say, but this, but that, but there isn't another cure. Then you're trying to say is that, well, the cure heart, you know, offense of the holy name, then there's something more powerful than the holy name to do that. You know, but then what are the offenses against that? So the point is Krishna is the one who's giving the blessings. But the point is that if you offend Krishna, then you have a problem. Because he's the one that gives the blessings. So then you already have that next level. That's the holy name. So there isn't anything beyond that. So it's not a matter of, well, what if you're doing this, what if you're doing that. It's a matter of whatever you're doing, go on chanting. Because there is no alternative. You know what I'm saying? Because there's no alternative in jhanas. Like that. Right? Does that make sense? Unless you, as they say, like I said, cross the northern border of Kazakhstan. Then there's a million different things you could do. But that sugar candy is the only thing.
So what would be, in this example, what would we say, but I got organic sugar candy, so it's better. Is there a...
No, but when Rupa Goswami is talking about sugar candy, he's only talking about organic. Natural, organic, you know, free range. What's that called? You know, it's fair trade. It's all that.
That would sound like... Then that sounds like what she was saying. If it's organic, then I should chant with some devotion, not just chant.
No, it's a matter of... You're going to chant however well you can. See, we're stuck on the thing that it has to do with how well I perform the activity, because karma produces results. It's what is your attitude in doing the activity. That's why this verse is there, that even if one is not very expert in chanting, like a little kid, how well is their pronunciation? But they're chanting the holy name, they're getting the benefit. Even though it's not necessarily proper, or they put it out of order, they can't remember how it goes. You know, Hare, 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 Krishna, Krishna, Rama, Rama, Hare, Hare. They're getting the same benefit. Like that. So that's the thing. It's the others put there so that you're there, that you make a regulated form in which you're always associating with the name, at least for a certain amount. Better is to increase that, but at least that much you're associating. So these things are there, you know, to keep us properly connected. But the point is the name is independent. So he's pleased by your sincere endeavor, you get the benefit. It's not how well you chanted, or, you know, you sat down and chanted, but the other guy's walking back and forth, so that's not real chanting, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, all these different things. It's nothing to do with that. It's about the mood.
Yeah. Right? To me, the organic was the mood.
But organic's not the mood. Organic is, we've decided organic is good. Because according to God's law, everything's supposed to be organic. But then that would be, so Vedic means organic. But we'll say Vedic is one thing, and then there's organic. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. In the 50s, organic was considered less ideal. You know, if it was man-made, it had to be better. Plastic was better. Anything was better than anything natural. Right? You know, if you had a wooden table, better than that was a plastic table. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like this. So that's the thing. So only when it became, and that became economically viable. So something that was made out of, artificial material was more expensive than the organic stuff. But as soon as then it changed, that they saw that it didn't work so good, now then organic because it's popular, because now people talk about it because it makes money. It wasn't making, people have been talking organic forever, but only because it makes money now it's being talked about. Right? Because it's on the bottle, it says organic, this, not tested on animals, this and that. But that bottle is owned by who? Who's made available by who? Some big multinational company. And they're only doing it because people, you know, it's become the talk now. You know, because after a while, then that will get old and we'll have to come up with something else. You know, it's got all these, you know, K vitamins and, you know, stuff that never was there before, right? You know, like that, you know. All, you know, in other words, everybody knows the words now. Now you have to come up with stuff that they can't pronounce it, right? Then it's, ooh, yeah, it's got, you know, all these. You know, it's like, you know, you're looking at spirulina, right? You know, it's got 5 million things in it that it's got like that. That's what fish eat. That's all they eat, right? You know, that stuff in the bottom of your pool that you're going, oh, the pool's dirty again. That's spirulina. That's all. You know, fish have known about it for a long time, you know, especially if we take it that fish were the first living entities. That's what they were living, that's what they were living off, because the first living entities were the spirulina, right? The beryllium, right? You know, so, but it's you know, nobody cared about it, right? You know, Neanderthal didn't care, the Greeks didn't care, the Romans didn't care, right? Medieval man didn't care, Renaissance didn't care, right? Like that. Some hippies over in Oregon cared, you know, so that's what, you know, then it became popular. And it was grown in Mexico. Does that make sense? So, the organic is only because we think it's special.
Okay, so what about the attitude? So, I want to chant with devotion, and then I think, but I don't have any devotion.
So it means at least focus. Means that's what he's saying. Chanting means Shuddha Nam, means it's pure, means there's no karma and gyan, and you're avoiding offenses. So that's what you have to do. It's not saying you have to chant with prema, because that's the point. Until you get to the platform of prema, you don't have it. Right? It means there's glimpses of it, but that's bhava. Those little bits of aspects of those feelings, attractions, that's bhava, not prema. When prema matures, then it turns into prema. But that's bhava. Like that. So then you know.
Do your best.
Yeah.
What you have.
Yeah. The point is avoid offenses and avoid, you know, material desire. If you chant the name like that, then it will act very quickly. So it gets in the way as offenses or karma again. That work?
Yeah.
The chanting of Hari Nam will be spoilt in two ways. Samanya. Oh, wow. Exiguously?
Exiguously.
And it means?
Good question.
Huh? Wouldn't have a clue. Exiguously. Do you know exiguously?
Very small.
Exiguously means very small. So samanya means very small. Samanya is like, you know, just the general, ordinary, like that. So, okay. Exiguously, very small. Or brihat, enormously. Okay. Yeah, because very small doesn't sound very... Exiguously, that sounds pretty good. He's an exiguous chanter. Chanting with ordinary exiguous fault is called namabhas, and the results of chanting are delayed. Impure chanting with enormous fault is namaparad. In this condition, only constant and intensive chanting for a protracted period can remove the enormous fault.
Mm-hmm.
Protracted means long. Protracted because, in other words, namaparad, you get rid of it by very, very, very absorbed in your chanting over a very long period of time. That's what I'm saying. Yes. You offend Krishna, then the holy name can get rid of that quite easily. But if you offend the holy name, then that takes longer to get rid of. But the only cure for offending the holy name is chanting.
Shall we call it prayaschitta?
No, it's not a matter of prayaschitta, because it means it's just the process.
But it's not defined.
Hmm?
It's not defined.
Not
like
defined?
Very long. Can be 1 year, 10 years.
Whatever it takes, like that. So, but the point is if you're doing constant and intensive chanting, even if the period is over, is it a bad thing? Yes. So that means you're focused because of, you know, and understand that nama aparada is there. And so when that nama aparada is cleared, then you're chanting the way you're supposed to be chanting. So now if you're chanting Shuddha Nam, you know, intensely in a protracted period, then you're going to get results very, very quickly. So all it's recommending is what is the position of what you're supposed to be doing. If you look at his prayaschitta, once I've finished the retributory activity, then it's over. You understand? But this is not over. This is just what you always do. So that's why it wouldn't be counted as prayaschitta, because it's the normal activity of Abhideya. Does that make sense?
I think it's mentioned in the Kali Sarvapatna Upanishad that one should chant 35 million holy names.
Oh, Kali Santarana.
No,
that just means that's what is the amount for Siddhi in the name. But the Siddhi is generally there for those who are worried about getting a perfection from chanting a mantra. It means when you have a Vedic mantra, you have to chant for a certain amount of time to get Siddhi. Then it works very nicely. So the point is if you chant the holy name very nicely like that, then this is your general amount of time that you would get Siddhi in it. Right? But we're not actually worried about Siddhi. We're worried about Shuddha Nam. Right, so you can look at it, Siddhi means then when you use this mantra in whatever rituals, then you'll get a good effect. But we're not worried about using the mantra in rituals to get an effect. So that aspect of Siddhi we're not worried about. We're worried about Siddhi meaning Shuddha Nam. And these things are only there because people are worried about time and space. Well, how long until I get, you know, like that? You know.
So then, they calculate.
Yeah, so it gives you some idea. Okay, so if you're chanting this much per day, that's going to take this much time. So that's why it recommends incessant chanting. So if you're chanting all day, then it's quicker. But all these things of worshiping the deity, anything connected with that worship, anything connected with you know, all these different aspects where the name, form, qualities, past and the Lord being discussed to describe, then it's also chanting. So therefore it can happen much quicker. It's just how much you're absorbed. Does that make sense? Because if you say that you have to chant this many, if you really want the results, what will you do? Count, but also chant more. Yeah. So then that's the whole idea. It will, for someone who's looking at it in that way, it gets them to be more absorbed. But otherwise it says one name is all it takes to become perfect. But it just gives a general idea. Yes.
I recall reading about rectification of offenses, nama varads, and the consistent theme was like repentance. I mean, there were some, you know, like plenty of Vaishnavi will make forgiveness, but the general principle for all nama varads is that you continue chanting but with great repentance. Is that a general idea?
Yes, but see, the point is here, prayaschitta means I've done something wrong, so I do something to make it correct. And then once it's correct, you understand? Then the tendency is going to stop. But that's why it's not seen in that light. It means you are rectifying the situation, so you can say it is a prayaschitta, but it's not seen like prayaschitta is seen. Because the only purification is chanting the holy name.
So then the attitude, it's just, to my understanding, the remorse is the attitude because you've made an offense.
But why is it remorse? See, the difficulty with the remorse, because also Manu also mentions that the Brahman doesn't absorb himself in remorse. So there must be a difference here.
remorse in the sense that I'm not going to continue committing. Krishna.
That's there. That's there. But the point is it's the connection to Krishna aspect, the remorse is there. But if you're just thinking, like we were discussing earlier, that I'm so low class and uncultured and fallen and this and that and on and on and on, like that, what is the connection to Krishna? I'm fallen. Fallen from what? I'm so sinful. What does sin actually mean? It means not being Krishna conscious.
Yeah.
So those definitions, those Manu says a Brahman doesn't absorb himself in.
Because that's all self-absorption.
It's all self-absorption.
So I always saw this kind of remorse as focused on Krishna.
Yeah, it means, in other words, focus yourself on Krishna and feel bad that you haven't been focused on Krishna. But you have to be focusing on Krishna.
Yeah.
Not that I focus on feeling bad. That's the difference. See, that's the modern thing. If you don't focus on feeling bad, then you haven't reformed. Right? That's the, you know, but the problem is that if it's just feeling, then if you do, then it's there. So then why is there a prized chitta? You know, so that's the point about prized chitta. You can get very, very mundane. You know, because the element of envy and jealousy, you know, violence, all these other things come up in the name of, you know, justice. So one has to be very, very careful. So that's why for the devotees, they don't worry about these things. That's why for Brahman, the foremost quality is forgiveness.
You know, of others and himself.
Hmm?
Of others and himself.
Yeah. I mean, the point is you didn't do it anyway. It means if Arjuna's not killing anyone in the battlefield, if he performed sinful act, you didn't actually perform it. It means the soul didn't perform it. The body performed it, but the soul is attached to that experience of that sin. That's the problem, is the attachment to sin, not what was done. You know, because we give credit to sin, because we think they're valuable activities. That's the problem. But for the liberated person, nothing mundane has any value. Therefore, that someone's performed something sinful, that's not the big deal. The big deal is are you absorbed in thinking of Krishna or not? Because even the most pious activity, being Lord Brahma, not being a devotee, that's also sinful. Anything that's not connected to Krishna is sin. Right?
You once made a comment how within ISKCON, especially if one's a leader and they make a mistake, they get ostracized.
So right.
Are you saying here it's a reflection of that misunderstanding that, okay, it was sin, okay, all right, let's move.
Yeah, in other words, the only purpose of Krishna consciousness or human life is to become Krishna conscious. So what can be done to improve the Krishna conscious? Because if someone's doing something sinful, that means they're not being Krishna conscious, you know, or it's compromised, you know. So the thing is what to do to rectify that. And you can't rectify Krishna consciousness by non-Krishna conscious activities. It doesn't work. You know, so, you know, in other words, I can't get rid of a cold by, you know, standing out in the cold. You know, so I can't get rid of the mundane by more mundane. You know what I'm saying? So where's the positive direct engagement? So we see Prabhupada, whenever leaders had problem, well, first he would see that they get good association. And then once they've gotten good association and become stable, he puts them right back in the same service they were in. Because if they're a manager, because if you're going to engage body, mind, and words in Krishna service, you're engaging the body, mind, and words, which is your conditioning. So the body, mind, and words of a manager is absorbed fully when they're doing management. If they're not doing management, it's not fully absorbed. So therefore, he would put the manager back in the management position.
Then you have all the other devotees that have the problem.
They have the problem. That's the key. All those ones, no, but everybody else will complain. That's your real problem.
That's pervasive in
our movement. Yes, so then the leadership should start preaching. But that's the hard part. It's easy to make a little few lines on a piece of paper that no one even will ever see. But to get out there and preach that this is material nonsense, get off your high, moralistic horse, you bunch of cow eaters. You know, it means poison like this. If he did this and it's not going to go away, how did cow eating go away? Of all the sins, killing a Brahmin and killing a cow, you don't get worse than that. So he didn't kill a Brahmin. So he did something that's less. Right? So how is that not going to go away by chanting, but you're, you know, killing cows and that will? And then they got the lame excuse that, well, that was before we were a devotee. No, we're talking about the soul here. The soul's always supposed to be doing this. How is this? So that this is just their own made-up religion. It has nothing to do with scripture. It just suits their Western, you know, how you say, mentality.
You have a whole temple of people.
So what? So what? Why don't they get it together and learn Krishna consciousness? Otherwise, if they revolt, that's worse than the sin that that person performed, as stated here. So that's why then the temple goes down, everyone fritters away, and then they blame it all on that guy because he did this. When did he do that? 1986. That's 26 years ago. Right? And in a few months, it'll be 27 years. And then, you know, you can't get it together in 20. Ask anybody, if you haven't gotten together in 26 years, who's got the problem? That's chronic, 26 years. That this did this, and so I can't. No, that's just an excuse. It's just all an excuse. It's just pure mundane. We're not saying that it's good, but the reaction that's there in the community, that's just pure mundane. You could even say pure unalloyed mundane. You know, you just don't get more mundane. It's just, it has nothing to do with reality. You know? You know what I'm saying? Because even you take the thing, even let's look at it as a scenario, is that saying, no, but this is the social acceptance. But there is the story, even, you know, other acharyas use there, is that you have an adulteress. Now, that's generally considered quite bad in society, right? You know, generally you don't get much worse than that, you know? You know, it's not that, you know, they come pushing the lady along the wall, you know, and throw her against the wall. Everyone's got their rocks there. Hey, well, what did she do? Oh, well, she was eating, a Big Mac double cheese, you know, like that. No, like that. No, she was snorting cocaine. No, it's like that. No, she was an adulteress. Right? So then the point is if you have no sin, then go ahead, throw the rocks. But if you are, then why you're the one throwing the rocks? And then everyone drops it. She walks away. And then she becomes a nice, nice devotee. Right? You know, so then that's the difficulty, is that somehow or another, even on that pranamoya level, you know, religious system, they can also understand that there is some temperament here. But in this other is that, no. So where is the spiritual, where is the religious, where is other thing? And the point is it's wrong. Why? Because it's immoral, not that it breaks down relationships, breaks down family units. The parents have break down that, it affects the kids. The kids, then they'll have a problem with, you know, being their own parents or them, with their other authorities. That's not looked at all. That's religion. That's dharma. It's only, oh, it's immoral. It's sinful. You know, hey, okay. So now we've dealt with the nursery school understanding of things. Now, what about, you know, getting to something mature? So at least bring it to dharma. If you're not gonna deal on the spiritual platform at bhakti, at least don't let it drop below dharma. Otherwise, because human life starts at dharma. When you drop down to pranamoy, that's just a sophisticated animal. And now, because that's the social environment, then now that has to take precedence over Krishna consciousness. Just because a lot of people want to lament and feel bad about it. Sanskrit has a name for people who like to lament. You know what I'm saying? So that's supposed to lead society? No, the Brahmins are supposed to lead society. Because they go beyond lamentation. You know, the basis has to be, well, what's the Krishna conscious point here? It's, oh, the people won't have faith. And who's saying it? About who are those people? Who's going to come on and say something? Throw something out on the internet. Say something outrageous. How many people will comment? About 20. Throw it out on a different topic. Outrageous. Who's going to comment? Basically the same 20. So the actual point is there's 20 people in the movement who will complain. The rest of them don't know what's going on, couldn't care less. You know, are too new to know what's going on. So, and those 20 people aren't new. So they can't claim they represent everybody, and they can't claim that at the particular position they're in that they should still have such mentalities. Why do they have such mentality? New people have less than that. So it's not an ornament. They should be looking at their own devotional life, how to advance. What's wrong with my devotional life here?
I think a lot of times they're looking at it from a point of view of protection of other people.
They don't think protection at all. They don't think of protection at all. Protection is establishing Dharma. Pranamoya is not protection. That's why I said it's all economics. The bottom line is economics. Because otherwise, why is the reaction justice? It's not establishing Dharma. Krishna comes to establish Dharma. Right? And that's secondary. To do that, you have to remove those who are against Dharma. But here we're talking pranamoy. Manu gives prayaschitta for things done against Dharma. It's not what's against on the pranamoy level. You know, on the artha level. Because that's already covered by Dharma. But the Dharma, those same persons who are grumbling, they'll also be opposed to Vedic culture. So it can't be Dharma. It's not protection. Protection is what Kshatriyas do. They will say it's protection. No, it's just their own brand of what they think is good. That's all. It's not protection. Otherwise, why aren't their kids, you know, being trained in Krishna consciousness? You know, why aren't they fully absorbed in that? There's no protection. Right? We're worried about, you know, women have this right, that right, but are they taken care of? That no one discusses. The feminine nature, is it being taken care of according to its needs? Childhood nature, right? Parents divorce, do this, that, separate, and all that. That's their own right. That's what's it, but that's their right. What about the children's rights? Right? To you, this partner, they come and go. It's a legal binding. But otherwise, it's not. If I decide to break it, there's no connection. But for the child, it doesn't matter legal or not legal. They're your parent your whole life. So who does it have more impact on? It's the children, not the parents. But the parents are, you know, fully absorbed that this is my right, this is my life, and no one else can tell me. That's not Dharma. That's not protection. That's just self-centered nonsense. That's all. Just they have nice language and present it very nicely, and so they bewilder you so you think it's something special. But it's not. That's what I said before. They make up a philosophy. But it has nothing to do with reality. You know what I'm saying? So that's why the Vedic culture is so strong on no divorce. Because it ruins families. It ruins children. It ruins generations. But that's not discussed. And if that's the point, is okay, well, let's not have any divorce. Then the point is then you have to have very good arrangements to see that people who get married are actually compatible. And is that going on? Is that officially working anywhere? No. So therefore, there's no protection. It sounds like it, but it's not. It's easier to explain it to a new devotee than it is to them. So it's not protection. It's just their own perception. You know, that's the whole point that's being given here, is that there's spiritual life, and then there's material life. And then within material life, you have all these different things, but everybody's got their own opinion on what's right. So that's why if it's not based in the Veda, even the material, they're going to kill each other. Right? You know, you got the conservatives and the liberals, but once you've established that one or the other is in control, then they, within their own group, kill each other. Right? So it's not about that. It's just about you know, creating an identity from which you can get your profit. That's all.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janyata Gaura Prema. Thank you.